episode 133.
So when my partnership split up in 1994, I made the jump, stopped turning a wrench, and went full-time into managing the business. And I was scared beyond belief. Now, prior to that, I'd been to a lot of classes, and they teach in these classes that you can be more successful if you're running your business rather than turning a wrench. Well, I found that hard to believe. But in the end, it did work out.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to Remarkable Results Radio, the automotive aftermarket's only podcast where service professionals and industry thought leaders tell their stories. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus for serious technical training and support. Online, on site, and on demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, welcome to episode 133 with TJ Riley from Same Day Auto Service. You know, I love doing these interviews for you. I get excited and engaged over every guest because the success stories can trigger ideas or actions within you. And that is what makes it all worthwhile, at least for me, and I hope for you. When you distill it down, every guest is telling their story. How many times are you afforded the opportunity to get a chance to listen to industry peers casually talk about their road to success? Unless you are networking or at your 20-group meetings, you are not connected to your peers, and the podcast does fill that need for you. I appreciate you as an engaged partner, wanting to learn as much as you can about our beloved industry and your professional and personal growth. So telling stories is the foundation of the podcast, and my guest, TJ Riley from Same Day Auto Service, has many to tell. TJ talks about his very unique startup when he owned a shop across the street from the shop he was employed at, his tough journey from working in his business to on it, his gratification from his work as a business coach for Elite Worldwide, and TJ's passion for customer retention and an important formula you need to have to be sure you can measure your share. TJ talks about how he came to write for Auto Inc. magazine, an article series that has lasted for 15 years now. I'm sure you've read it. Also, listen to TJ share his customer service commitment called Going the Extra Mile and create the wow factor. Many more stories that make this listen a powerful dose of knowledge shared by one of your industry peers. Now enjoy a very sincere, honest, and straight-up interview with TJ Riley. Nice to be with TJ Riley of Same Day Auto Service in Clackamas, Oregon. Hey, TJ, are you ready to share your remarkable results?
I most certainly am. Nice to be with you, Carm.
Hey, thanks, man. Clackamas, Oregon. Where is it?
Well, it's actually pronounced Clackamas.
Oh.
But, well, we're basically Southeast Portland.
So, TJ, you're a Japanese car specialist.
That's correct.
How did that start?
It started back when I was an apprentice. I got frustrated working on every vehicle there was. And actually, my second apprenticeship was working on Jaguars, of all cars.
Okay.
And what I discovered was that within 6 months, I get to be very proficient on Jaguars. And here's a car that most automotive technicians say, oh, these are the worst cars in the world. Well, if you work on enough of them, you get good at it, and it's not a problem. And so what had happened was I went to work for a dealership later on, which was Honda and Jaguar, Lincoln Mercury, Isuzu, and Volkswagen. And they started sending me to Honda schools. And so I transitioned from being a Jaguar technician to a Honda technician. And then years later, opened up my own store and decided I wasn't going to do just general repair. I had discovered that if I'm working on the same car, I got to be really good at it. Customers got a better repair. Customers got more accurate diagnosis. And everybody was happier.
Now, if I owned an Acura, but my wife owned a Chevy, would you take it? Take the Chevy?
At this point, no.
Okay.
Right now, we don't have any technicians that are proficient in those type of vehicles. So if I was to hire somebody that knew Chevys in the future, sure, we would. But my business was originally built on Honda, Toyota, Subaru exclusively. And then later on, we branched out into all Japanese vehicles.
Okay. Excellent. Well, that gives you a great focus. Now, take me back to the day you're working at dealerships and you said, hey, I got to get into my own business. What was it like? What was your thought?
Actually, I hadn't planned on getting into my own business. I was working in Southern California, and my wife and I decided to move to Oregon to be with other family, and we just liked Oregon. So we moved to Oregon. I took a job in a small auto repair shop in Northeast Portland, and I turned it into – it was a general repair shop, and I talked the owner into allowing me to specialize in Honda cars. So within a couple of years, we had built up that business pretty good, and a retired friend of mine said, hey, you want to go into business together? I said, okay, what do you got in mind? He said, well, if we can find a building, we'll do it. So the building across the street from where I was working came available, and we managed to talk the guy that owned it into selling it to us instead of renting it to us.
Smart.
So I hired four technicians, two Nissan and two Toyota, and for the next 2 years, I continued to work across the street while I ran my own business on the other side of the street.
No. Great story. And wait a minute. Wait, what a big risk to hire four techs right out of the chute.
Uh-huh. I did the advertising, the hiring and firing, the training, and I still turned a wrench across the street full time.
And the owner of that shop had no problems with that?
He didn't, because by then we were only doing Honda cars.
Got it. Okay.
And so any customer that had a Honda and a Toyota now could still, you know, do business on the same block.
So, TJ, how did you manage your transformation from technician to entrepreneur businessman?
It was a lot of classes.
Got it.
So a friend that owned a general repair shop down the street introduced me to the Automotive Service Association.
Aha.
He talked me into becoming a member, and that association had sponsored lots of business classes. And so over the years, I just took advantage of every business class I'd get my hands on, because up until that point, I really had no formal business education. I had a couple of years with a college, and I'd been to many small classes for fixing cars, but nothing business. So after I had my own shop for 2 years, my partner says, hey, you want to do it again? So we found another building about 10 miles south in Clackamas and purchased the building. And at that time, I quit my job and went working full-time for myself.
So at one point, you were a multi-shop operator.
I was.
And do you still have two or just one?
No, in 1994, my partner and I went separate ways, and now I only have my own store.
So what was the boldest decision you've ever made in your lifetime as a businessman?
I would say the boldest decision was going from being a technician to being a business owner. So when my partnership split up in 1994, I made the jump, stopped turning a wrench, and went full-time into managing the business. And I was scared beyond belief. Now, prior to that, I'd been to a lot of classes, and they teach you in these classes that you can be more successful if you're running your business rather than turning a wrench. Well, I found that hard to believe, but it did. In the end, it did work out.
Yeah. Well, let's move up to modern time, because you're a coach for Elite Worldwide.
That's correct.
Wow, talk about the school of hard knocks and being able to share those emotions and those decisions that you've made with people that you've coached. What's your greatest joy from being a coach?
My greatest joy is seeing my clients succeed. I had a client in North Carolina that was, he had cars everywhere. He was not profitable. He was working mega hours. His employees weren't happy. And I helped him put procedures, policies, and systems in place to where now his employees are happy, his customers are happier. He got rid of the backlog of cars he had that he couldn't get fixed. His sales went up. Everything's better when that happened.
And you could actually say to him, hey, listen, you're shortcutting a whole bunch of stuff because I struggled with all this.
Right, right. I knew everything he was doing wrong because I'd been there, done that.
Yeah.
And over 20-some years, I'd had taken all these classes, which I slowly put things into practice. So my clients get the benefit of the 20-plus years of classes that I've taken.
Know why you install Felpro, the gaskets professionals trust? Every part that goes into a Felpro box is validated and approved by a Felpro engineer. Product testing and validation is an integral part of Felpro's engineering, manufacturing, and field testing, where vehicles undergo tests that log over 1 million miles every year. They also reach out to you, the pro, through technology blogs and their technical forums to listen, learn, and keep in touch with you. It's amazing to think that Felpro produces over 325,000 gaskets per day. That's 325,000 per day in their 1 million square foot facility in Skokie, Illinois. Under the same roof, engineering and manufacturing uphold Felpro quality utilizing 4,500 active production tools with tooling tolerances to 5 microns. Now that's smaller than a human hair. A tight tolerance like that ensures the sealing ability of Felpro gaskets. And their own in-house chem lab develops proprietary formulations like PermaDry Plus to produce 35,000 molded rubber sealing components every day. Plus, with Felpro, you get coverage from 1955 of 96% of all domestics and 93% of all import vehicles. So feel confident that with new engines and new technologies, Felpro will be there with innovative solutions to solve your customers' sealing problems. Felpro, the gaskets professionals trust. Go to felpro-only.com for more information. So policies, procedures, everyone tells me one of the biggest things you could have in a business and follow.
Absolutely. So just my own story was I got tired of my employees constantly come up to me and say, TJ, what do we do about this? TJ, what do we do about that? TJ, we have another warranty situation. So I started writing these things down, and every time an employee asked me a question, I wrote a policy. And then I put that in a policy manual, and I trained my employees that this is what you need to know. If it's not covered in the manual, let's talk. And so I went from basically holding every employee's hand all day long to being a somewhat of an absentee owner.
Interesting. Absentee owner. Can we cover that in just a few minutes?
Because, you
bet. Because I hear you don't work a lot of hours a week. Is that true?
That's correct.
Good. Well, we got to learn how to do that. So you've got this great business. You're a coach for Elite. And I hear that you've got a fabulous customer retention program. Tell me about it.
Our customer retention program consists of constantly touching our database. I think that the biggest mistake that shop owners make is thinking that they have to go after new customers all the time. Now, that needs to be part of your advertising program, no doubt. But I learned in one of, actually it was one of Bob Cooper's classes, that your customer is not your customer. So what that means is if you think that every one of your customers is your customer, you're absolutely wrong. Customers will go from shop to shop to shop.
I see. You're making an assumption that they're loyal and they're not, so you have to market to them.
Correct. So here's an exercise your listeners can do. Look at how many customers you have in your database, and then you figure that the average customer has 1.5 cars, and if you figure the average person drives 15,000 miles a year, and according to Consumer Reports, that customer should be spending 8 to 12 cents a mile on maintenance. So do the math, times the miles by the amount of cars, divide it by, or times it by 0.08 cents per mile, and that's what your sales should be.
Ah, your revenue stream, yes. So listeners, what's going on is we stopped the recording for a minute while TJ could go out and do some numbers for us, and he's going to come back and share.
Okay, so let me give your listeners some stats if they think that their customer is their customer.
Okay.
So let's, you know, it's not uncommon for an automotive shop to have 3,000 customers in their database over the last 3,000 customers in their database over the last
20
years.
Let's
just go back 3 years.
All right.
Because generally, if a customer's been in with 3 years, we say they're probably still a customer.
Okay.
So at 3,000 customers, you figure each customer has 1.5 cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 4,500 cars.
Yeah.
And then we're going to times 4,500 by 15,000 miles a year, which is about the average miles a customer drives.
Right.
So out of that, we've got 67,500,000 miles, and we're going to divide that by 8 cents a mile. Now, we know that consumer reports say a customer should spend 8 to 12 cents a mile. So we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say 8 cents a mile. So when you times that by 8 cents a mile, then that means your sales, your yearly sales, should be $5,400,000 in sales.
And I'm doing $750,000. What's wrong?
Right. And it's because your customer is not your customer. So my retention program consists of, I like to touch my database with some sort of a mailer 3 to 4 times a year minimum.
Got it.
Because I want to keep my name in front of my customer and let them know, hey, I'm still here.
Besides mailing, what do you do?
Probably the next biggest thing we do is go in the extra mile. So in my area of Clackamas, we have the highest Google rating, the highest rating with Yelp.
Okay.
And that's because I've learned it's not being right is not the most important thing in business. And in fact that's the reason why you contacted me, because you saw my article on Auto Inc. called What Would You Do?
Yeah.
And it's with ethical situations. So I've been doing this article for about 15 years now.
Hey, I want to tell you something. You were on my short list before I read that article. I just want you to know that. But that article was the reason that I called you, and I said, you know, it's time we hooked up. So let's talk about that. You do an article for Auto Inc. magazine. It's called What Would You Do? And I've seen that it goes back to 2013, and it's probably longer than that, like you said. The article for May and June, TJ, was after a customer gets lowball estimates from other shops, he wants his long-term shop to refund the overage. And you basically put that question out to peers of yours to ask them how they would solve your problem. And then you write what you would do, and then you write what actually happened. I think it's a fascinating look at solving problems. Where did you come up with the idea?
That's kind of an interesting story. It all started with my wife going to a sewing convention in Texas.
Okay.
She's at at the sewing convention, and I had nothing to do, so I decided, well, I'm going to go visit the headquarters of the ASA, Automotive Service Association. And so I was, many years ago, I was a past president of Oregon ASA.
All right.
And so I knew the people there, and the editor, actually the assistant editor, says, so would you like a tour of our place? I said, great. So a guy named Levi, who's now retired, gave me a tour, and afterwards he said, you know, we're always looking for ideas for our magazine, you know, what we can do for columns and articles and stuff. Do you have any ideas? And so I thought about it, and about 10 minutes later I said, how about a column called What Would You Do? And he said, well, what does that look like? And so we talked about it. So I left, and a year later he calls me up, says, you know the idea you had? Yeah. We want to do it, and we want you to be the author. I said, okay.
All right, I'll do it, right?
Yeah, so for the last about 15 years, I've been doing that. If your listeners are curious, they can, if they Google TJ Riley, What Would You Do? It'll come up on Google. There's lots of different ones there.
So what do you enjoy most about this, writing these articles?
I enjoy other businesses emailing me with ethical situations that are not clear-cut, and they're challenging.
A major learning curve for you, right? A major, for you, it's almost like free advice.
Yes, and quite often the shop owners are tempted to just look at, you know, what's right, what's wrong, and just cut it off there. But in the process, it's too easy to lose a customer.
Yeah.
And you look at the value of the customer, especially today. The problem today is, not only if you don't go the extra mile for customer, you've got social media against you. And so you can be right, but yet it can cost you thousands of dollars to be right. So in one of my articles, I quoted a little poem from Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And it's one of the poems that I train all my people on, and it goes like this. Here lies the body of William Jay, who died maintaining his right of way. He was right, dead right as he sped along, but he's just as dead as if he were wrong.
I remember reading that. Talk to me about the gray areas. When you get responses from your peers, do you see a lot of gray or really blacks and whites?
Oh, there's a lot of gray. A lot of gray. So I encourage my readers to always give the customer the benefit of the doubt. If the peer insists the customer thinks they're right, but you know they're not right, go the extra mile.
Customer's right.
And it's not so much that the customer's right as it is, this is business. This is not personal. This is business.
Yeah.
And so how I treat a customer is different than how I would treat, say, a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, I'd sit down and argue the fact, hey, you're wrong, buddy, and let me tell you why you're wrong. Okay? And we have a friendship, and I can do that with that relationship. But in a business-customer relationship, I can't do that.
Very powerful message. So the value of this entire series of articles that you write, the impetus of your articles is doing the right thing in the eyes and for the customer.
Right.
Got it.
Because ultimately, it will benefit you, the business.
You've always counted on Moog to keep you ahead of the pack when it comes to chassis innovation. Well, they've done it again. Most recently launched is the Moog ball joint with a pre-installed integral dust boot. It's designed exclusively for compression-loaded suspension systems, providing superior strength and durability for these types of vehicle applications. The dust boot is made from higher strength materials and comes pre-installed, saving you time because it's easier to install. It also has a larger contact area against the stud, which makes a more effective seal. For your customers, the unit uses Moog's powdered metal gusher bearing that provides longer life and controlled radial and axial movement. You get the industry's leading coverage of 10,000 SKUs, including 4,600 for foreign applications. Hey, you've been installing Moog confidently for years, and now you know why. Hey, what are you getting better at?
I'm getting better at communicating with my employees.
What started that?
Having people tell me I'm an ass.
That could do it.
In our elite groups, there's a friend of mine that has a shop in California, and he's with the same coach that I'm with. I'm a coach, but I have a coach.
I know your coach. And your coach did an episode with me.
Yes, Jim Murphy. So
yes.
So Jim has just a wonderful way about him, and he's just an awesome, awesome coach. Well, one of his clients, who's a friend of mine, was constantly having employee turnover. And he said, Jim, what am I doing wrong? And Jim just looked him straight in the eye and says, he said, Gene, you're a boss hole. and Gene took it wonderfully, and he started making changes. And now he's not having the turnover he had. And that was me many years ago. I was definitely a boss hole.
If anyone wants to hear Gene Murrill talk about that, I interviewed him almost over a year ago in episodes 6 and 7. And here we are in the episodes, 129. Gene Murrill. Wow. Great story. It's amazing how all you Californians are so connected out there. It's just amazing. Yeah. Gene Murrill says, I was a boss hole.
Yeah. He learned from that. And I was too. And I learned how to correct it, differently than he did. But yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge is knowing how to reprimand an employee so that they feel good about it when you're done.
So, all right, you've got a great team, I'm assuming, since you don't put in as many hours as a normal owner would. And I want to ask you about that in a minute. What's the tenure of your team?
I have a technician who's getting ready to retire now that's been with me for 28 years.
Wow.
And I have another tech that's been with me for almost 20, another that's been with me for 10. I've had some recent office staff changes from retirements and moving on, but my tech's been with me for a lot of years.
Aren't you being a little critical of your communication skills since you've got people with you that long?
Well, no, because my intercommunication problems was with my office staff. Ah. It wasn't with my technicians. Although I will clarify that I had in years past said some things to my techs that to this day they still have wounds from it.
Aha, emotional wounds. Got it. Yes. I understand. And have they ever come up to you and said, "Hey, TJ, thanks for changing"?
No, actually they haven't.
Well, I hope they listen to this and they go to you and say it. So, all right. So tell me how many hours you put in a week.
Well, last week I think I was there for an hour.
Okay. And the place completely runs without you then, obviously, right?
Well, you have to. I do my advertising and customer correspondence and some of my vendor correspondence from home.
Okay, right.
And so I do put some hours in, but I don't do anything day to day at the shop other than, you know, I'll pop in and see how everybody's doing. This morning we had a service advisor meeting before the shop opened for an hour. So we do that, you know, at least once a month. But nothing day to day.
So when you get together with the team and you have this scrum, this meeting, what do you talk about?
We talk about how do we better serve the customer so that they have the wow factor. We want to see the wow factor. How do we create the Disneyland experience with our customers?
You know, I went to Disney University, and I learned a lot about their customer service strategy. And I heard the story about them working for days in workshops, putting everything up on the wall, and then they ended up with these words, "Look them in the eye and smile."
Yes. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, customer service. So I got to tell you a funny story about my dad.
Sure.
So my dad was in the automotive industry his entire life, and when I was 18, he had his own repair shop, and we had this customer that I was taking home, and the customer says to me, "You know, every time I get my car fixed, I have to bring it back one or two times, every single time. But you know why I keep coming back?" And I'm sitting there as a young person, very embarrassed by what the guy's telling me, and I said, "Well, no." And the guy says, "Because I really like your dad." and I think that says a ton. You know, if you can develop the relationships with your customers, even if you make a mistake fixing their cars, they will come back. But you can fix their car perfectly every time, and if you don't build that relationship, they're gone.
They gotta like you. They gotta like your place. They have to love the personality. They have to like how they feel in it. They have to be satisfied that they got value for what they paid. Hell, I'm telling you that, and you know that better than me.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's your escape?
Escape from what?
From all the craziness. Well, you don't have any craziness in life. You only work an hour a week. So you don't need an escape.
Well, I'm only at the shop an hour a week. I do put in a few more hours than that.
All right, so you put in 40 hours somehow. But what do you do to just...
Maybe 10.
What do you do to burn it off?
Well, in the wintertime, we have snow in the mountains in Oregon.
Yeah.
So I snowmobile.
Okay.
That's my passion.
Cool.
And in the summertime, I fly airplanes.
Ah. And when you take off on, a trip, hours or... like a day trip and come back, go up and land somewhere, go to a city, have dinner and come home. What do you do?
Yeah. Or hop an airplane and go fly to the airport, have lunch, come back, or go fly someplace for the day and tour around and come back.
You go to the airports that have restaurants at them, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I've eaten dinner at a couple places like that once. It's really, really great to see all the small planes come in and out. The best piece of advice, TJ, that you've ever been given?
Oh, that's a good one. I was involved in a 20 group, and there was a guy that had multiple stores, and he had a problem hiring technicians. The technicians weren't very good, and he had a lot of mistakes, and it was costing him money. And this was something that at the time was really just about causing me ulcers. Is every time my tech made a mistake and it cost me money, I didn't know how to deal with it emotionally. So I asked this multi-star owner, I said, "How do you deal with it?" And he looked me straight in the eye and said, "TJ, warranty is nothing more than a line on your balance sheet. As long as that line on your balance sheet is within the numbers or the percentage that it's supposed to be, it's fine. Don't worry about it. And so I went back, looked at my balance sheet for the year and previous years, and all my warranties were within acceptable numbers, and that just totally helped me relax every time we had something go wrong with a car.
It was a part of life situation that you learned to deal with.
Correct. I learned how to see it in proper perspective. Instead of seeing it, oh no, I got to spend another $300 or $1,000, I now look at it, well, this is a line on my balance sheet, just like my laundry bill is, my electric bill, all my other expenses. This is a normal expense of business.
It costs of doing business. I get it. Good advice. Hey, what makes you choose your number one supplier?
Service and the quality of the parts.
And who is that supplier?
Worldpac.
Got it. Warranty. What's your warranty for your customer?
Our warranty is 3 years, 36,000 miles.
And do you cover all of that?
We cover all of that. We even cover towing. We had an interesting situation. We had a customer. We did a timing belt on a car, and the customer drove 6 hours to Eastern Oregon. And when he got there, the front crank pulley fell off. So I don't know if obviously we have to get a new pulley now because it was probably wobbling for quite some time. So they're stranded there. They have no way to get back. So I grabbed one of my rental cars, put it on a tow dolly, drove to Eastern Oregon, gave them the rental car, put their vehicle on my tow dolly, and drove back. And we took care of it.
There you go. Above and beyond the call of duty.
That's going the extra mile, literally.
The extra miles, for sure. Great story. Thank you. Hey, describe the learning culture inside of Same Day Auto Service.
Well, within the Elite family, there is many online courses that my service advisors can take advantage of.
Okay.
They have an awesome 3-day course for service advisor called their master's program, which I have sent one of my advisors to that just really helps big time. On my technician side, we have classes that come available through our local community college and some of our vendors. And so those are all presented to my technicians, and any one of them that they feel that they're deficient in, I pay for the class.
Got it. Do they have to have a certain minimum number of hours per year in training?
I don't require my techs to. I know a lot of shop owners do that, but I don't. My technicians are all master or L1 techs, and so they're the best in the business. I suppose if I had an apprentice tech, I would probably require that.
So you're heavy into systems and procedures. Have any unique system that's improved workflow that you're proud of?
Yes, I do. We pre-print every repair order before the customer comes in. So the day before the customer comes in, we print the repair order. Then we look up the history. And we want to know basically 5 different components of the history, which we're going to write on the ticket. We want to know when was the last oil change. So if they didn't come in for oil change, we know whether we should recommend that. We want to know what was the last reported brake percentage or millimeters, because I don't want to have a tech saying that the last time the brakes were 30% and this time they're 50%. That's really very embarrassing to have brakes grow on a customer. We want to know when was the last timing belt, if it has a timing belt. We want to know when was the last thermostat, if the car has got over 100,000 miles. And we want to know any recommendations from the last 2 times they were in. And what we found that by doing this, we're not selling customers things they don't need. The techs aren't recommending something we already did. And we've been able to reduce the amount of breakdown. So that's the first part of the prep. The next part of the prep is we prepare the estimate. We pre-order the parts the night before. So when a customer comes in, all we have to do is verify their information, get their signature, and out their door they go. So in a typical shop, a customer could come in, and the process could take 10, 15 minutes to get them out the door while they're trying to get to work. In our store, they come in, and they're literally out the door in a couple of minutes.
Got it.
And they appreciate that.
Preparation is key then for you.
Yes.
And when you say you order the parts ahead of time, are you talking about like if you were doing a brake job, something that you know that car was getting?
Correct. Obviously, we can't order every part that we might need, and we're not going to do that because that wouldn't be fair to the supplier.
Yeah.
But if last time we ran, we told them they need brakes, and they're coming for brakes, then we know what we need.
Where are you spending your marketing money?
We just started investing in pay-per-click.
Okay.
I don't have any numbers on that as of now. We hired an SEO company, which has really helped us. Probably the bulk of our money is spent on touching our database. Over 50% of my advertising budget is touching my database.
In the mailers.
In the mailers, through emails, yes.
Using social media? Using Facebook at all?
We do use Facebook, yes.
How often are you posting?
Not often enough.
Got it. The shop of the future. Have you put your crystal ball on, TJ, in a while and looked down the road and said, hey, this is what the shop of the future is going to look like?
I can see shops being looking a lot different. I can see shops specializing on electric vehicles. I think we're going to see more and more of those. So I foresee specialty shops for electrical vehicles. And I still see the average repair shop because I don't think we're going to see electric vehicles for pickup trucks and SUVs and minivans. I think we're still going to see them for another 20 years. So I think that's where the money's going to be in the future is the larger vehicles. I think the money on the smaller vehicles are going to go away because of electric vehicles.
Got it. Hey, what are you the most proud of?
My grandkids. They're awesome.
Any big changes coming to the business in the next couple of years?
My daughter is starting to take the reins. My daughter has three kids of her own. And she was working for a restaurant at nights. And when my bookkeeper retired, I offered her the position. So she took some classes on bookkeeping, and she's been my bookkeeper the last 2 years. And now I have her starting to manage my office staff and doing some of the advertising. So I'm slowly training her that if anything should happen to me, the business goes on.
How smart that is. Creating a perpetual business plan. Excellent, excellent. TJ Riley from Same Day Auto Service, and I got to get this right, Clackamas, Oregon?
That's correct.
I said it right. TJ, give us some great words to live by.
Remember to always go the extra mile. It's not only for your customer, but it's also for you. It will pay you huge dividends, I guarantee it.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you being on.
Thank you, Carm.
Hey, I told you it was going to be a great episode. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for an in-depth episode experience, don't miss the show notes page for this episode with TJ Riley. Find them exclusively on the show notes episodes page on RemarkableResultsRadio.com. Hey, any questions or comments, don't hesitate to email me anytime at carm@remarkableresults.biz or head over to the contact page on the website. And you can even give me a voicemail at 716-320-1567. A voicemail again at 716-320-1567. Hey, remember, you are an important reason I bring you these interviews, so you can profit from the stories found in each episode. Your help is needed to share the wisdom and grow this very important industry resource, and I'm grateful and thankful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.